Live from WRAL News Headquarters in Raleigh, your number one source for local news. WRAL News, coverage you can count on.
Right now, a crowd is taking part in a Love, Hope, and Unity walk at St. Augustine's University. We're live with the latest efforts to keep morale high as the school faces an uncertain future. Plus,
just to advise, all of downtown Sulphur is destroyed.
Piles of mangled debris, shattered lives, and power outages across parts of the Midwest. Why the worst may not be over for people in the Midwest.
And we can take a look at that front right now as it's crossing parts of the Deep South. That front will arrive here later in the week without the severe storms, but I'll show you what to expect when it gets here.
St. Augustine's University students, alumni, and faculty are marching around the university. It's part of a Love, Hope, and Unity walk. Good afternoon to you. I'm Jeff Hogan.
And I'm Renee Chu. Thanks for joining us. The walk is to show solidarity as the university struggles to keep its doors open. WRAL's Destiny Patterson is walking alongside them. Destiny, what are people hoping to gain from this walk today?
Well, Renee, it's in the name. They are really focused on hope here and seeing the university get back on track. You can see the group here. They've got signs. They've been chanting. We've been out here for about 2 hours at this point. Of course, this comes as the university is struggling with issues with its accreditation, as well as struggling with millions of dollars in debt. Also leading the charge here is Coach Williams. You might remember him. He was a legendary track coach here on campus for years before he was fired, but he says that he doesn't hold any grudges and he wants to see the university succeed.
We're here to make a difference. We know we got things to do. We have bills to pay. We have academics to look at. We have a lot of stuff that we need to do, and so that's why we're here.
Now, some of the alumni out here tell me that they want the truth. We're continuing to ask the university questions about enrollment as well as donations and the status of its accreditation appeal. There will also be a news conference here, and we're continuing to get those answers for you. And we'll be out here for the next several hours as they continue to demand that those answers and continue their hope for the university.
We wait to hear how the school will move forward in this. Destiny Patterson, live in Raleigh.
Be hard to tell right now. It's so nice out, but our next weather front approaches tomorrow and brings a chance for showers and storms. Elizabeth Gardner is on the WRAL weather patio with a look at our best chance for rain over the next few days. Elizabeth.
So tomorrow and Wednesday, we'll see this front slowly moving across our area. This front has a history of producing severe storms. Right now, we have severe thunderstorm watches, and we've had tornado warnings and severe thunderstorm warnings, especially down there in the Deep South. You can see that mainly across Louisiana. That's that same storm system that we'll be talking more about that caused a lot of destruction across parts of the Midwest. So this front will continue to slide eastward. We take a look at what happens tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're going to see our skies clouding up fairly early. This is going to be lunchtime tomorrow, but it's likely to be later in the evening before we end up with a decent chance of a shower. Here's 5 o'clock, and even at 5 o'clock, most of the rain is back to the west. An isolated thunderstorm could pop up, but notice as this moves into our viewing area closer to the triangle area, much of it is fizzling out. That front will stall here. There's 8 a.m. on Wednesday and then mostly dissipate. It's possible that we would see an isolated shower or thunderstorm later on Wednesday. That's lunchtime Wednesday, and in our eastern or southern counties, we'd have a better chance of an isolated shower or thunderstorm on Wednesday. We're not talking about much rain either Tuesday or Wednesday. We take a look at our rain chances for tomorrow. It's a 20-30% chance late afternoon into the evening, and then really the same thing again on Wednesday. But a different front comes through for the weekend. It looks like it could bring a better chance of some much needed rain. I'll show you the timeline for that coming up.
Thanks, Elizabeth. An encampment of Palestinian supporters is growing at UNC Chapel Hill.
So far, the university is not taking action to remove the tent village that's been on campus since Friday. WRL's Matt Tallhelm is live on the main quad at UNC with what students are demanding and what the setup looks like at this hour. Matt.
Yeah, Renee, I've counted more than two dozen tents. You can see them set up here all throughout this quad area. Some students even bringing sleeping bags along with them. They've really taken over. You can see down here they have signs up here blocking off the area here for this encampment. This is now day four of this encampment here. They've taken over the central part of the quad here, Polk Place, between South Building on that end and down there Wilson Library on that end. Now, this is all organized by the group Students for Justice in Palestine. They set up their tents here on Friday. They are demanding the university disclose any investments in Israel and to end that funding. They're also calling for a ceasefire to the war in Gaza, which started back in October when the terrorist group Hamas launched surprise attacks on Israel. A grad student encampment leader here who would only give us the name S says they are prepared to stay here for the long haul.
Students have attempted to try to grab the university's attention hasn't been working, and you can't really turn a blind eye to a massive encampment of students, faculty, and community members. And I think this is sending a clear message that, like, we are still here 7 months into this, and we're not going anywhere soon.
Back out here live, you can see this is not just UNC students here. There are signs for Duke showing solidarity here. Also on this side around here, you can see there's a sign for NC State students that think that their money should be divested here. Now, organizers say there are about 75 people who are staying here. They're sleeping in these tents, staying here since Friday, but the numbers sort of swell depending on the class sizes. You can actually see a good number of people who are out here. They've brought their chairs, their blankets. They are setting up. They're doing their classwork here. It's a very organized thing with meetings that go on here. Now, I have reached out to the university to ask if they have any plans to remove this encampment or to do anything here. At this point, we have not heard back from UNC, but that has happened at other universities.
We'll continue to keep an eye on that situation there at UNC Chapel Hill. Matt, thank you. World Central Kitchen says it plans to restart aid efforts in Gaza. Their work was paused when Israeli airstrikes killed seven aid workers weeks ago. They have 200 trucks with supplies for 8 million meals ready to enter Gaza through Rafah Crossing and Jordan. The organization is also exploring new sea routes to get supplies to the region.
Chapel Hill native Keith Siegel is being held hostage right now by Hamas. The militant group released this video of him Saturday. WRL talked with his childhood friend, Alon Tal, about his reaction to the new video. Tal says he feels great relief that his friend is still alive, but he has fears over what will happen next. In the video, Siegel calls for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to negotiate a hostage release deal with Hamas. An Egyptian delegation also recently visited Israel as part of an effort to reach a deal.
Looks like this is going to be a critical week, and perhaps we'll find a way to bring him home and give him some semblance of a life after the nightmare that he has suffered.
Siegel's wife, Aviva, and their daughters also put out a video asking for his release. Siegel's niece, Hannah, also spoke after seeing the video.
I have faith that we can do a deal now, but I also think that if that isn't possible, then the Biden administration should think about what they can do directly to bring our American citizens home.
Siegel's wife, Aviva, was released by Hamas after 51 days in captivity and had not heard from Keith since then.
A new CNN poll reveals former President Donald Trump continues to hold an advantage over President Joe Biden as their campaigns and Trump's criminal trial move forward. Trump's support in the polls among registered voters holds steady at 49% compared to Biden at 43%. The poll also revealed most respondents felt Trump's term as president was a success, while a broad majority says Biden's has so far been a failure. Former President Trump's hush money trial is on break today, but court will reconvene tomorrow morning. Today is part of the last 2 days of the Jewish holiday of Passover. Trump faces 34 counts of falsifying business records to disguise the hush money payment issued to porn actress Stormy Daniels that allegedly constituted an illegal campaign contribution. The trial, entering its third week, is expected to last 6 to 8 weeks.
Durham police have identified a person killed in a shooting early yesterday morning. Officers responded to West Morgan Street and Watts Street around 2 o'clock yesterday morning. They found 19-year-old Ashir Harrington on the ground with a gunshot wound. He was taken to the hospital where he died. The investigation continues, and police say it appears to be an isolated incident. Rocky Mount police are looking for this man. They say he robbed an 83-year-old woman Friday afternoon. Investigators say it happened at a PNC Bank ATM on Benvenue Road. The 83-year-old woman was treated for minor injuries. If you have any information about this person, Rocky Mount Police want you to call them.
Today, the state's electronic court filing system, known as e-courts, expands to 10 more counties. The North Carolina Judicial Branch says after that happens, nearly half of the state's population will live in jurisdictions served by e-courts. Most of those expanded counties are in our viewing area: Durham, Orange, Chatham, Franklin, Person, Granville, Vance, and Warren counties. 11 more counties are set to join the program in the fall. The Department of Justice says a federal jury convicted a Fort Liberty Army major. Investigators say 42-year-old Kojo Darty smuggled guns to Ghana in barrels of rice and home goods. This is one of those barrels right there on your screen. The DOJ says in 2021, Darty bought 7 firearms from Fort Liberty and had an Army staff sergeant in Kentucky send him weapons. Darty hid the weapons, including a shotgun, AR-15, and handguns, in the blue barrels. The weapons were smuggled from the port of Baltimore. Authorities in Ghana intercepted them. Darty could spend up to 20 years in prison. He'll be sentenced in July.
If you need a passport for an upcoming trip, there is a chance for you to get some help with that process today. Passport Fair is happening today at the Wake County Commons Building on Caria Drive in Raleigh. The fair runs until 3:30 this afternoon. You can find a list of documents to bring at wake.gov. Next at noon, 88 days and counting until the Paris Olympic Summer Games, and we start to take a closer look at some of the incredible athletes and the history that could be made.
Also, storm damage stretches across several states as tornadoes swept through the Midwest. The devastation left behind.
Plus, teachers and bus drivers at Wake schools are planning a protest. What they want and why now.
Keep watching WRAL News over the air, Channel 34 and Spectrum Channel 1257.
And it's happening right now in the WREL Live Center. An internet outage has affected service at multiple DMV locations in the Raleigh and the Garner areas. AT&T says this outage happened at about 8:15 this morning, saying it was the result of multiple fiber cuts. The outage is affecting 7 driver's license offices and 4 license plate agencies. They say they will attempt to reach out to customers to reschedule appointments. They are working to restore power. Right now, they don't have a timetable as to when that will happen, but they do remind drivers that they can visit their website, which is what you're looking at right now, ncdmv.gov. You can renew your driver's license and do an address change. All of that can be done online.
Michelle, thanks. The excitement is building. The Summer Olympics in Paris are just 88 days away. Today, we check in with a U.S. gold medalist who is looking to make history at the Paris Games. Asia Wilson could make history as a member of the first Olympic team of any sport to win 8 straight gold medals.
So what do you have on today, shoe-wise? What are we rocking?
I have on some Nike Dunks, a little pink and green. Little iridescent check, Nike check, because, you know, Nike keeps the checks coming.
The incomparable Asia Wilson, who has really answered the bell. Asia Wilson inside.
Just relentless. Absolutely relentless.
I am Asia Wilson. I play basketball, and I'm from Columbia, South Carolina.
Yeah, I like to sing here and there. You know, a little karaoke swag is what I'm down for always. My teammates are always down to do it as well. We kind of just vibe off of each other. We like to be each other's hype women. No matter what, we just kind of going off of the lead singer. Sometimes the background dancers turn into the lead singer because we always love main character energy. So it always goes off the vibes. All the single ladies, all the single ladies, all the single ladies.
Now put your hands up. Yes, I can do a little something like that.
So excited to share the cover of my upcoming book, Dear Black Girls.
I have written a book. It's called Dear Black Girls. It's throughout the whole course of my life. It starts off as a young version, and then it kind of goes into Asia now as a professional athlete and the things, the ups and downs, the roller coaster of life, and how I tackle it day by day. Just a book of my journey of how I found myself and how I love to venture out and just being true to myself and sharing that story with young black girls, particular that look like me. They can see kind of an insight into my world, but also they can be successful if they just stay true to themselves.
NBC and Peacock will air unprecedented Olympic coverage, including daytime live broadcasts of swimming, gymnastics, and track and field finals. WRL's Liz McLaughlin will be in Paris, bringing you live coverage this summer. Watch all the action here on WRL starting July 26th.
At least four people were killed. Several others were injured this weekend when devastating tornadoes tore through the Midwest. This is a look at the damage in the town of Minden, Iowa, where officials confirmed one person was killed after a tornado touched down there. NBC's Jesse Kerr shows us the widespread damage as millions remain on alert for severe storms stretching through Missouri and Texas.
Holy.
Oh, my God.
This morning, devastation in Oklahoma.
Just be advised, all of downtown Sulphur is destroyed.
Sulphur, Oklahoma, population roughly 5,000, taking a direct hit. The harrowing nighttime twister captured on camera.
Oh my God.
Locals say this was the small city's historic downtown. Now it's been reduced to rubble. Roofs are gone, buildings destroyed, this mail truck tilting on a pile of debris.
It honestly looks like somebody just dropped a bomb on this area because it's gone.
Officials say at least 100 people are injured from relentless storms across the state.
You just can't believe the destruction.
Devastation stretching from Texas to the Midwest with torrential rains and tornado reports in College Station and Trinity, Texas. And at least 120 tornadoes reported across multiple states. Much of Minden, Iowa, ripped to shreds.
Here in Minden, officials say this ravaged home is in the middle of a street. It's supposed to be yards away on this foundation. And you can see it is hardly the only building badly damaged.
The community now comes together to pick up the pieces.
When something's that bad, you almost go a little bit numb. And so now it's a matter of just getting up and going forward.
Jesse Kirsch reporting there, and even today, the storms still continue. I was watching some live reports from Texas this morning. Cars just flooded out, roads just rivers.
All that damage, it's so disheartening to see there in Tornado Alley. That storm system will eventually make its way to our area, but will likely lose steam. Meteorologist Elizabeth Gardner in the WRL Severe Weather Center. For now, we have a gorgeous day in store, Elizabeth.
Yeah, ahead of that front, it is just gorgeous for us today. We have high pressure in control of our weather. We can take a look at the gardens behind me and, of course, up from up above. And there are definitely people out here enjoying the gardens. Our humidity is low. It's a lovely day to be outside for sure. Let's take a look at some of those temperatures that you'll see as you head out the door. Right now it is 78 degrees and our humidity is nice and low, so it feels perfect. It's a little breezy. We have a west wind at 11 miles per hour, but that west southwesterly wind is helping to bring the warmth in. That's going to stay with us for the rest of the week. We'll hit 80 degrees most likely by around 1 or 2 o'clock and then keep it there all the way until around 7 or 8 o'clock tonight. So we're going to hold it there in the 80s, which is not going to be bad because our humidity is not too high right now. We do have some gusty winds. We're looking at gusts right now in Rocky Mount up to 22. We're gusting to 18 in Roxborough, 19 up in South Hill, and 18 in Goldsboro. So it's a little gusty out there. Oh, and I didn't mean to forget Fayetteville. Fayetteville's gusting to 18 right now as well. So we're going to be gusting 15 to 20 through the afternoon, and then that should settle down some overnight tonight. We may end up with some low clouds or fog overnight tonight, but right now we're dealing with gorgeous sunshine. But there's not even a cloud in the sky right now. 85 for the high in Raleigh, Durham, and Fayetteville for this afternoon. And let's talk about the humidity a little bit as well, because that's the key. You know, once we start to see our temperatures climbing into the 80s, if that humidity climbs with the temperature, then it starts to feel pretty miserable. But right now we're sitting at 58 for the dew point, which keeps us nicely in the comfy zone. We're going to get a little closer to tolerable later in the week, but it is just that. It is tolerable. You might start to notice, you might say, yeah, it does feel a little bit more muggy as opposed to right now where it feels really, really delightful. But we're not going for steamy or tropical anytime soon. So even though the temperatures are climbing, the dew points will not be so bad. 76 is our normal high. And again, these highs are going to be well above that, anywhere from the mid to upper 80s through Friday. Here's a look at that front. Again, lots of thunderstorms along that front, especially south of Memphis down into the deep south. We check out FutureCast again. Look looking at increasing clouds for us tomorrow. Today's just going to be a nice, quiet day. We'll watch that front as it gets closer to us. This is the same front that caused problems for folks across parts of the Midwest. Out ahead of it, a few isolated showers and thunderstorms, and that starts around 5 or 6 o'clock tomorrow evening. It fizzles quickly by 9 o'clock, so it may be just the western part of the viewing area that sees it tomorrow. And then the front sort of stalls there in the east for tomorrow, or for Wednesday, I should say, and that's going to be where the main focus of any showers and thunderstorms will be on Wednesday, south and east where that front is lingering. Talking temperature, tomorrow's going to be the hottest day of the week at 88 degrees. We still haven't hit 90 officially at the airport, which is fine with me. It's probably fine with everybody else too, but you know it's coming, but probably not this week. We'll probably just miss it. Saturday and Sunday, we have a better chance for showers and thunderstorms. We are proud sponsors of the Race for the Cure on Saturday. I'll show you if it looks like it's going to stay dry through the morning coming up.
Elizabeth, thanks. Some of the stories we are looking at today on our evening news, WRL's Matt Tallhelm just showed us the situation on UNC's campus over the tent village that's growing on Polk Place, the main quad there. We'll be there all day to see who makes the next move, students or administration. Matt will be back starting at 4 to show us how the situation plays out in live reports.
Plus, for many, arthritis is a fact of life as we age. Doesn't have to be, though. Today on our news at 5:30, learn about research performed here in the Triangle that can detect arthritis years sooner and give you a chance to turn it around. Also still ahead this noon, changes in the air for one economy airline. The rumors surrounding what's to come for Southwest Airlines and the reason behind the discussions.
And Domino's wants to give back to customers who tip their delivery drivers. Coming up, the pizza promotion in which everyone's a winner.
Changes may be coming to a major airline as you take a live look at RDU International Airports, courtesy of our WRL Live Cam network. Southwest Airlines is considering changing the way it does its open seating and boarding processes. The Southwest airline looking at ways to counter losses from those Boeing delays. The airline currently has open seating in a single economy class. The airline plans to make an announcement in September, and we're told added baggage fees will not be part of any changes. American Airlines is cutting some flights due to delivery delays of the 787 Dreamliner from Boeing. American expects to receive half of the Dreamliners they were initially going to receive. Some of the flights reduced include trips leaving from New York and Dallas, Fort Worth, headed to Europe. Airline officials plan to reach out to impacted customers to offer alternate travel arrangements.
Renting is now cheaper than buying a home in all 50 of the largest U.S. metro areas. A new study from Bankrate looked at the typical monthly mortgage payments and rent. The average mortgage payment was $2,703 a month, while the average rent was about $1,900 a month. Bankrate says high home prices, mortgage rates, and low inventory are making it difficult to purchase a home. Apple has reportedly restarted talks with OpenAI, the maker of ChatGPT, to build a chatbot for the iPhone. Apple is also in talks with Google to license its chatbot, Gemini, for iOS 18. It's possible Apple could license technology from both companies. We expect to learn more about the company's AI efforts later this year.
All right, quick, check your wallet. That $1 bill could be worth thousands. Two sets of $1 bills were printed in 2014 and then again in 2016. More than 6 million misprinted bills with duplicate serial numbers are now in circulation. Currency collectors hope to find as many of these matching pairs as they can find. Only 9 pairs have been matched so far. So one collector sold a pair for about $6,000.
Nice. Well, starting today, Domino's Rewards customers can earn a little by tipping their delivery driver. It's called You Tip, We Tip. Here's how it works. Customers can earn a $3 coupon each time they tip delivery drivers $3. Okay, what if you tip your driver more? Well, the amount of the coupon does not increase if you do. Coupons are also only valid for a week.
First Durham, now Wake County Public Schools workers are sounding off about their pay, when some schools could experience a walk-in.
Plus, the Supreme Court deals another blow to Tesla CEO Elon Musk. Why lawyers will still have to approve some of his tweets on X. First, here's a look at the winning North Carolina Education Lottery numbers from yesterday.
G
shot in 4K ultra-high definition. Your number one source for local news. WRAL News. Coverage you can count on.
Wake County school teachers and bus drivers are planning a protest tomorrow to highlight their need for an increase in pay.
WRAL's Sean Gallagher is live at Wake County Public Schools headquarters. And Sean, why now for this protest?
Yeah, well, Jeff and Renee, the school board is holding a special meeting right here behind me tomorrow. So the teachers and bus drivers participating in this protest tomorrow morning hope that their message is heard by them about their need for an increase in wages. Now, on your screen right now, you'll see these are the schools participating in the walk-in, seven in total, including five elementary schools and two high schools. The protest will start with bus drivers at the Rock Quarry Transportation Complex tomorrow morning. The North Carolina Association of Educators is asking for a 4% raise on the local side of the budget. The Wake County School Board has expressed support for including raises for employees, but they say it could come at the cost of cuts elsewhere. And despite tomorrow's protest, the teachers involved will be at school on time to get to work for what's important, and that's teaching Wake County's kids.
Educators walk into schools every single day to do our job. And it feels like right now, especially our school board members are walking out through inaction, right, by not including pay raises currently in their discussions before the budget proposal goes to the county commissions.
And time is running out on submitting a budget. Next Tuesday, the school board will be back here to vote on a proposal to send to the county commissioners to look at. And then sometime in May, the county commissioners will likely vote on how much local funding they will provide. So, Jeff, time really is ticking here.
It is. We have seen it played out in other areas as well. Sean Gallagher, live Wake Schools headquarters. Thanks for that.
Tonight, you can learn more about Wake County Public Schools' American Indian Education Program. An open house and public hearing is happening tonight from 6:30 to 8. It will be at the Garner Training Center on Avery Street. Students, administrators, and program coordinators will share highlights from the past year and information about efforts across the county. American Indian tribal leaders and urban indigenous organizations will also be part of the discussion. Tonight, Durham leaders will decide how to use more than $367,000 in opioid settlement funding. The county's public health department plans to use nearly $141,000 to create a position for opioid program manager. It also plans to use more than $226,000 to fund a peer support program to help people who are struggling. Commissioners will talk about the plan during their meeting at 7 tonight.
And happening right now in the WRAL Life Center, we just got word President Biden will be in Wilmington, North Carolina on Thursday. He's set to talk about environmental issues. We know that this is an official presidential visit. This is not a campaign visit. They say he is scheduled to arrive around 3 p.m. An exact date and location has not been determined yet, but we will, of course, be on top of this and bring you the latest.
Thanks, Michelle. People are back in their apartments in Raleigh after a fire had them out of their building and on the street this morning. Brett Neese was there in the WRAL Breaking News Tracker as firefighters were on that scene.
An incredibly scary wake-up call for dozens of residents here at the Sir Walter apartment building on Fayetteville Street. A lot of them tell me that it was extremely hard to breathe because of the smoke as they tried to get out of this building. Take a look. This is video from the WRAL Breaking News Tracker showing you what the scene looked like. The fire broke out around 1:40 in the morning. Officials tell me they were able to put it out in about 20 minutes. I spoke with Scotty Johnson. She lives on the 7th floor, and that's where this fire broke out. She says this is one of the most frightening nights of her life.
Well, the alarm started going off. My dog came running into my room because he was scared. So I looked out the door, and when I looked out the door, my hall was covered with smoke. I grabbed my backpack, my dog, and came down the stairs.
Johnson's mother lives on the 8th floor. She tells me it was a while before they were finally reunited. One person was taken to the hospital with burn injuries. I'm working to get an update on their condition. In Raleigh, Brett Neese, WRAL News.
Meanwhile, two men are dead after a mobile home fire in Moore County near Carthage on Union Church Road. WRAL's Kelsey Coffey has the latest on the investigation. Investigators were working here on the scene for more than 8 hours. Take a look now at this video from Sky 5 that will show you the aftermath of this fire. You can see this mobile home is a total loss. The fire happened just after midnight. A person saw the flames and called 911, according to fire officials. We're working to get an update on what caused this fire. We're also working to find out if there's any more information about the two men who died, so we'll be sure to keep you updated. Kelsey Coffey, WRL News in Moore County.
Starting today, a new hotline will help people who were formerly incarcerated to get resources they need to get back on their feet. It's called the Recidivism Reduction Call Center. Advocate Kerwin Pittman created this first-of-its-kind hotline in the state. It'll be staffed Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 p.m. The goal is to help folks re-entering society get jobs, find living arrangements, and get resources to become productive members of society. Pittman says this hotline was funded by donations and grants.
This definitely goes hand in hand with Second Chance Month, particularly this month in April. And so we want to make sure we highlight Second Chance years, right? Not just months. And so this hotline will hopefully be around for years and will evolve into something that we have never imagined before.
The hotline launched today. You can see the number on your screen right there, 888-852-0004.
While you're getting through spring cleaning, you might want to go through your medicine cabinet, the dangers of taking expired medications, and how to know if you should toss them.
Plus, why Damar Hamlin joined Michigan's governor for a bill signing ceremony, the state's new laws involving emergency response training. You can download the WRL News app and stay up to date on breaking news, weather alerts, and stories that matter to you wherever you are. When it comes to spring cleaning, a lot of folks probably think about cleaning out closets, garages, baseboards, things like that. But this is also a great time to check the expiration dates on your prescription medications. Liquid antibiotics, insulin, and blood thinners may do more harm than good once they're past their prime. In fact, poisoning can occur from accidentally taking medication that's been lingering around the medicine cabinet too long.
Expired medications have the potential for becoming more toxic and potentially interfering with other new medicines that you may be taking. On the flip side, expired medications may lose their potency and not work as effectively.
One way to make sure you're not using outdated medicine is to take your medications with you to your next annual exam. This way, your doctor can help you decide which prescriptions you should toss.
The number of measles cases in the U.S. and around the world is growing. The World Health Organization says the number of cases worldwide nearly doubled from 2022 to 23. Almost half the cases have been in Europe. The U.S. has had 128 cases this year as of Friday. The Biden administration is taking steps to make sure gay and transgender Americans have access to health care. The Department of Health and Human Services is expanding its safeguards to protect against discrimination. The new rules will bar health providers and insurers that get federal funds from discriminating against people seeking care based on gender identity or sexual orientation.
Some NFL teams could be sporting a new look in the upcoming season. It has nothing to do with the design of their jerseys. We'll tell you how helmet cushions could help players avoid severe brain injuries.
Plus, a watch that once belonged to the Titanic's richest passenger sells at auction at a whopping price. How much the buyer was willing to pay for this piece of history.
And we bring you back with this live look, Pinehurst Resort and Country Club. Just a beautiful day in the Sand Hills, certainly, and elsewhere, pretty much everywhere, as you watch WRL News, available on Hulu and the WRL app on your TV or streaming device. This morning, the U.S. Supreme Court rejected Elon Musk's request to back out of his 2018 settlement agreement with the SEC. The agreement came after Musk made a series of tweets about Tesla that regulators alleged were fraudulent. Musk's now infamous 2018 tweet claimed he had funding secured to take his electric car company private at $420 a share. The statement led to wild swings in the company's stock price. Under the agreement, a company lawyer must approve his social media posts about Tesla. Musk says the so-called Twitter sitter provision violates his First Amendment rights.
There's a new safety shift in the NFL. Players now have the option to wear a special kind of cap in regular season games to protect against head injuries. George Solis reports the helmets were approved to use in practices 2 years ago.
The NFL now taking perhaps its most visual and polarizing steps in drastically improving player safety. The league now expanding the use of these admittedly far from fashion-forward softshell helmets. Athletes now given the option to wear guardian caps beyond practice to regular season games. Engineered to enhance protection against head injuries by as much as 20%, according to league data. The league cementing their stance.
If you're going to take a punt from Mike Tyson straight to the face, would you rather put a pillow over your face or take it straight on?
The NFL introduced guardian caps during training camps in 2022.
We saw the guardian cap this year. The guardian cap again had a 50% reduction in concussions for the players who wore it in training camp.
NBC News on the field then with Washington Commanders offensive lineman Sadiq Charles.
At first I wasn't sure what to think about it, but I'm always open to change.
A year later, the NFL mandating their use during practices for most players.
We've seen players sacrifice looking cool to be safe in the past, and so we talk about CTE and helping avoid some of those things that affect you later on in life. I think if they're able to prove that it does reduce that, then players will get on board with it.
Even now, reaction to the beehive-shaped coverings has been mixed. One player writing, "This is the craziest thing ever." Hey! And it's not just the pros. Some high schools have been using them for years.
When we first started wearing them, I had coaches coming up to me making fun of us.
Livonia Churchill's high school's football team in Michigan has been sporting caps during practices since 2017.
I think we've been a pioneer of player safety at our school, and we're going to continue pushing that envelope for sure.
But will guardian caps take the field or fumble as the NFL continues to tackle player safety? George Solis, NBC News.
This year's NFL draft broke the all-time attendance record. More than 775,000 fans attended the event in Detroit. Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer used the opportunity to sign two bills into law. One improves emergency response training in schools for people who suddenly go into cardiac arrest. Schools around the state will have to develop emergency response plans by the 2025-26 academic year. The other bill requires coaches to undergo CPR and AED training. Buffalo Bills safety DeMar Hamlin joined Michigan's governor for the signing. Hamlin, as you remember, went into cardiac arrest while participating in a playoff game two seasons ago, made that miraculous recovery, and now spending a lot of his time promoting safety and the importance of knowing CPR and how to use an AED. That saved his life.
He'd be all for it, anything safety like that. But the coaches, that's interesting because they're the closest people to all the players at any given time. They're the first responders right there during practices and things like that. Elizabeth Gardner is outside the WRO patio, and it is just a gorgeous day out there. Elizabeth, we're looking at that 78. That's really nice right now.
Beautiful. It's really nice. I mean, it is Goldilocks weather to the nth degree, that is for sure. We are looking at clear skies, a little bit of a light breeze right here. It's been a little gusty in some places, but our humidity is low. Our temperature is perfect. It's just, yeah, I don't know what else to say about it, except for the fact that you know it's not going to last. And here's what's coming next. Of course, we've been talking about this. We're going to be tracking this cold front moving in over the next 24 to 48 hours. It's going to move in tomorrow and then stall and hang out through Wednesday. This one has produced a lot of damage, especially across parts of the Midwest. We've seen a lot of strong storms overnight, last night and this morning in the Deep South, particularly East Texas and Louisiana. It looks like we still have a severe thunderstorm watch that's in effect. There's so much activity down there that it's really hard to tell. But we've seen multiple tornado warnings and severe thunderstorm warnings this morning and up until right around now. So future cast again, as that cold front gets closer to us, we will end up seeing mostly cloudy skies. We may wake up to some low cloud cover tomorrow morning or some fog, and then maybe see a little sunshine breaking through later in the afternoon. So there's 5 o'clock, and you can see just to our west some scattered storms. By the time we get to 9 o'clock, most of that fizzles out, and then the front slides into our eastern counties. And then on Wednesday, there's 8 a.m., so we may end up with some sunshine in our western counties, but our eastern counties tomorrow may end up mainly cloudy with a few isolated showers and thunderstorms. The amount of rain that we end up seeing for tomorrow and Wednesday, it's going to be fairly minimal. Probably both days combined, it won't be much more than around a quarter of an inch. Right now, it looks like the models are hinting at maybe a little sprinkle on Thursday, and then Friday looks nice and dry. And then Saturday and Sunday, we're looking at the long-range models now, and so those are just not as precise ice as our short range models that we're looking at for, say, Tuesday and Wednesday. But here's how things look. We're especially concerned about Saturday morning. We are sponsors of the Komen Race for the Cure, as we always are. For decades, we have been, and we're so proud of that race and all the good work that they do there. By lunchtime, we're looking at some showers, but right now it looks like there may be a window of opportunity in the morning to get the race in without rain. But then through the afternoon, you can see that continuing to develop there with some showers and storms, especially from the Triangle area westward. Then on Sunday, we continue to see that front just stalled there with another chance for afternoon and evening thunderstorms on Sunday. The eastern part of the state looks a little drier than the western part of the state. But for us, we're looking at all total Wednesday, Thursday, Friday and Saturday, seeing as much as 3/4 of an inch of rain to a little over an inch. And we really do need the rain. So that's going to be a good soaking. Looking ahead with some of these models, we can look out 10 plus days. And it looks like once we start this slightly wetter pattern on Wednesday, that we may see it for a while. We definitely need the rain, but we've had, you know, such stretches of dry conditions that may come to an end once we get into the middle to latter part of this week. Saturday and Sunday look a little cooler with highs in the low 80s, but that is still above normal for this time of year. Keep checking back if you have big plans for the weekend, and we'll be fine tuning that forecast for you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. An 80-year-old watch rakes in a record-breaking bucks. Look at this thing. It's a Seiko. Special function, though, that this Rolex can perform that garnered a seven-figure price tag.
Prince Harry is returning to the United Kingdom next month to mark the anniversary of the Invictus Games. The trip will be Harry's first visit to England since he made a quick trip to see his father, King Charles, when the king was diagnosed with cancer in February. Harry is scheduled to attend a service for the 10th anniversary of the Invictus Games Foundation in London, May 8th. Harry launched the Invictus Games in 2014, and the sporting event is for military members who've been injured in combat. The Super Bowl may soon become part of a three-day holiday weekend. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says he's considering pushing the game date back by a week in February. So that would put it on the Sunday right before President's Day, which is a government holiday. He says he'd also like to expand the regular season from 17 games to 18.
A rare Rolex watch just sold for millions of dollars in a record-breaking auction. This rare Rolex reference split seconds chronograph watch sold for a whopping $3.5 million, the highest price for a watch of its type. Split seconds watches have two distinct mechanisms that let you measure two separate events at the same time. The watch was sold through an auction house in Monaco. And while we're on the topic of expensive watches, a rare artifact from one of the richest passengers on the Titanic shattered expected winning bids this weekend. A gold pocket watch once owned by businessman John Jacob Astor sold for almost $1.5 million. It was expected to sell for about $189,000. Astor died on the ship after helping his pregnant wife onto a lifeboat. The watch was passed on from Astor's son to the family of his secretary.
An interesting artifact from the Titanic. Investigators are looking into whether a new substance in Goldsboro is linked to overdoses in Edgecombe County. Today on our News at 4, the unique way investigators found the substance by swabbing dollar bills. Friends and family from all over the country came to Minnesota to celebrate the birthday of twins turning 90.
How about this? Jim and Jerry Myers are celebrating an impressive milestone and reflecting on resilient lives. The pair's mother died when they were only a few years old while giving birth to their younger sister. The kids went on to live with their grandmother, who passed soon after. With all of that early struggle, the twins still look fondly at the past.
My highlight would be is going fishing up at the Lake of the Woods and catching fish. And you can imagine the battle between the two who caught the most and who got the biggest. Okay.
Jim and Jerry both went on to lead humble lives. Their families say the pair really defined what it means to be a twin.
All right.
Keep watching WREL News over the air, channel 34 and Spectrum channel 1257.